Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, April 26th. And today we're going to talk about the day that Isaiah became Isaiah. But first, this is your boy Matt Shook, an AP freelance writer out in Chicago, covering the NBA, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. We're going to run down Wednesday's playoff action and also talk about Thursday night's schedule and another segment of Pistons playoff playback. This is one of the major ones, where one of the big memories of the Bad Boys and even Going to Work eras combined. Not a memory for me, as I was one when this happened, but it's a game that still resonates today in the career annals of Isaiah Lord Thomas III. Well, they're also going to be talking at the end about Stan Van Gundy, kind of set the table for the weekend, where things stand with these mystery meetings that are going on with Tom Gores out in California. No news yet as I tape late on Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. And no shows planned for Locked On Pistons for the rest of the week. We take Fridays off in the Pistons offseason, but I have a feeling we might have to jump on to do a breaking news show at some point before Monday, but we will see. But talking about playoff action first, the Cleveland Cavaliers topped the Indiana Pacers 98-95 in Game 5 on Wednesday night. LeBron with a three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game, also blocked a Victor Oladipo shot before that and an amazing recovery. Obviously brings to mind the Game 7 block he had in the finals a couple years back. He did it. It was amazing. 44 points, 15 of 15 from the line. It's just an incredible thing, and I know on Pistons podcast we're supposed to rip on LeBron and talk about the negatives, but man, if you can't appreciate what this guy's doing in his career, I don't understand why you'd be watching sports in the first place. But that all that said, this is the first round. This is the Pacers. I feel like it would be too much for him for all this to continue to the NBA Finals, especially looking around at his teammates. But that being said, the Eastern Conference is wide open. That's why it's a little bit frustrating as a Pistons fan to see that teams can get hot and make a little run here, possibly in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's really not completely implausible for any of the eight teams to make the NBA Finals. I mean, seven teams now with Miami being out, obviously. But I guess Miami is probably that one team that even before the playoffs started, you said they're not going to go to the finals. But other than that, is there a single team, maybe Indiana, I could throw in there now as I think about it too, but even an eight seed like Washington, would you be completely shocked if they made the finals? It'd be surprising, but anyway, my little tangent there. Kyle Korver, how about him? 19 points in a nice effort for the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. Victor Oladipo, 2 of 15 from the field. Uh-oh, not great, Bob, for Victor Oladipo, so we'll see if that recovers in time for Game 6 as the Indiana Pacers head home on Friday night. Oklahoma City, the Thunder, topped Utah. And like I said, if you know me and know a little bit about the podcast, you know I was surprised about this one. Although, not completely, because you knew that Russell Westbrook is an unbelievable competitor and that he was going to be zeroed in on this one, a 107-99 win for the Thunder. 45 for Russ, 34 for Paul George. Utah led this game by freaking 25 points. And it looks like that Billy Donovan has found his patterns and his substitution mix that's going to work most likely for this team. And it looks like Carmelo Anthony is going to be on the bench for some of that too. As Paul George and Westbrook, it might be them the rest of the way. Like I said, Melo, yikes. I mean, that happened quickly for his fall off. I hope he gets kind of rededicated and not that he's not dedicated, but, you know, refocused and injury-free maybe in this offseason and has more relevance in his career as it winds down in these next few years, couple years or however many years there are for him in the NBA. You just hope that it doesn't just fall off a cliff and fall away forever for his whole career. Jay Crowder, 27 points and 23 for Donovan Mitchell, in a losing effort for the Jazz. You got to hand it to OKC. Really the only way that they could change the tide in this series is not just getting that win on Game 5 in Oklahoma like I expected them to do, but for them to kind of maybe get a little bit of a psychological edge by making the big comeback and going with a dominant fourth quarter like they did. Russ, of course, being a force of nature and all of that. Obviously, Rudy Gobert's foul trouble was a huge factor, was probably the biggest reason, in addition to Russell Westbrook, who, we have to mention, did shoot 39 field goal attempts in this game, which is an unbelievable number. But yeah, Gobert going down with foul trouble is probably the biggest thing to watch in Game 6 and possibly Game 7 as well. You would expect quite a crowd in Utah on Friday night. Those guys are going to be rocking in Salt Lake City. The Raptors beat Washington 108-98. The home team has held serve in all five of those games in that 1-versus-8 matchup. DeMar DeRozan, 32 points. Kyle Lowry had 17 and 10. Jonas Valanciunas played in the fourth for the first time in this series and was effective. Yay, big men, if you're a Pistons fan. 14 points and 13 rebounds for him. John Wall, 26. Bradley Beal, 20 in a losing effort for the Wizards. And Houston, the Rockets knocked off Minnesota in Game 5 to win that series 122-104. Clint Capella had 26. James Harden, 24. If you're a Minnesota fan, I don't know. Obviously, a couple of young cornerstones in Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, although he was disappointing this year. But, you know, Derrick Rose was pretty good. It's kind of the biggest thing that stood out for them, the Timberwolves. I mean, I live in Chicago here. I've covered a lot of Bulls games, so I'm kind of a little bit more in the fabric of Chicago sports than probably your typical Pistons fan, probably a lot more in the fabric anyway. And the Derrick Rose phenomenon, even here in Chicago, is crazy. I mean, people just think he's what he was when he was an MVP all those years back, and it's just crazy. People think he is, every time there's an opening, and you probably see it on Twitter too, every time a team needs somebody, that a lot of people are like, oh, go get Derrick Rose. He's, you know, and obviously he showed his worth in this first round series for Minnesota. It was kind of a change of pace, backup guard, backup point guard type. Obviously he'll never be the player he was before, but good for him to battle all those injuries and to continue having a productive NBA career is nice to see. Minnesota might need to get creative this offseason. I don't know. Maybe that's overstating things a little bit. You got Butler and Karl-Anthony Towns leading the way, but maybe they make a big deal. Maybe they make some smaller deals. I don't know. Minnesota is a team that's got some questions. We'll see what Tom Thibodeau, the executive, has up his sleeve, as the coach hasn't really shown out during his return in Minnesota these first couple years. But an interesting night of hoops coming ahead on Friday. Do you think anyone closes it out? Get on Twitter and answer that for me on Friday for those three games. Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Any of those game sixes are going to be closeouts? I would have bet my life on Utah before watching game five, but now that game six becomes a little bit more of a toss-up to me. Not completely sure. I still say Utah is going to win game six at home. Cleveland's going to win game six on the road as well, although that's kind of a toss-up too. But I do believe that Washington wins at home and that Toronto goes to game seven. But I think, like I said, I think a lot of these games have gotten into toss-up range. And tonight, another entertaining one as well. Four games on Wednesday's slate, one on Thursday, and then three on Friday. Obviously, the schedule is predetermined, and they made some of the wrong choices before the series has started here in the first round. But Boston back in Milwaukee for Game 6 tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Milwaukee, 4.5-point favorites back at home. Win or lose, it could be the final game in the history of the Bradley Center in downtown Milwaukee. I went there earlier this year for the only time that I have been there. It was a very nondescript building, which is fine. It's just basketball, and that's all it is. Just really vanilla basketball arena, no frills whatsoever. No suites down low like the Palace. No, really, the concourse is nothing to speak of either. But nothing wrong with that. But they'll be coming with a newer and more improved version right next door. They got the three buildings, the old building there, and then the Bradley Center, and then it's escaping my name. I know that's the famous with the floor and all that stuff. I can't think of it right now. I'll come back from break and have that name for you. And the new arena will be right next to those as well. But also after the break, we'll have the latest on Stan Van Gundy, maybe give some of the prevailing opinions on the interwebs and dig up what some of you guys are saying about the mystery meeting with Tom Gores right now. But also, if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked on Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we got reasonable rates. So email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, @yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes!
Later on in Pistons playoff playback, we're going to be talking about the night that Isaiah became Isaiah, and it was in downtown Detroit. It wasn't at the Pontiac Silverdome or anywhere else, the Palace of Auburn Hills in Oakland County. Downtown Detroit. We'll be talking about that as we got to relive the past because the Pistons are not in the playoffs this year. But by the way, the name for the old arena in Milwaukee that I was reaching for in the last segment, the Mecca, of course. Now, It's named the UWM Panther Arena right now. The Milwaukee Panthers, the Horizon League rival of the Oakland Golden Grizzlies, and of course the UAD Titans, they play there now. So they got the Mecca, and then the Bradley Center, and then the new arena right next to that, all three in a row. It's kind of a bizarre setup that they have there, but obviously a hoops, you know, heaven for some people in Milwaukee as well. Very interesting just to have those all lined up like that. But the Stan Van Gundy saga continues for Detroit Pistons fans. All quiet on the news front for now. The word was that they were going to meet starting Monday night in Los Angeles to have a multi-day conference between Stan Van Gundy and Tom Gores. Adrian Wojnarowski was the one who kind of reported that. Vince Ellis backed up that it was going to be a multi-day thing and had some sources saying that it would be by midweek that we'd get some clarification on the future. James Edwards III of The Athletic wrote about the potential compromises that could be made by Gores and Stan Van Gundy in that meeting. Some of those options include removing him from the front office while keeping him as coach, getting a new general manager and unseating Jeff Bauer, or reconstructing the coaching staff, which is an interesting one to think about. You don't hear a lot about Boyer and Tim Hardaway and the other members of the coaching staff. Aaron Gray's on there too. Malik Allen and Rex Walters, a couple former players. Rex Walters, the former Grand Rapids Drive coach, is now on the pro staff too. So maybe you bring in some more experienced names there, or maybe some more innovative coaches, or maybe some guys we've heard of that could bring another strong presence into the locker room, whether that be kind of an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator in some ways. And maybe that's off the mark. Maybe those guys are doing a great job and we just don't hear about them because Stan Van Gundy is such a, you know, kind of a big name, and anything that's written about the Pistons nationally, which is not a lot, is basically centered around Stan Van Gundy as far as the coaching ranks. You don't hear about the Pistons assistants, and they're not names in, they're names in the basketball world, but not in the coaching world before they came in. So interesting to see if some of those compromises may come out of this meeting. The prevailing notion seems to be that it might be status quo from those guys that cover the team. We really haven't seen any articles or updates from those guys as far as theories about Stan Van Gundy leaving, or that Gores maybe would ask Stan Van Gundy for some of those concessions or some of those compromises, and that Stan Van Gundy would turn it down and that there would be a mutual parting of the ways. It sounds like I said, the meeting started on Monday night in LA, but that there would be multiple days of meetings, and then maybe we'll get some clarity by midweek. Well, it's kind of past midweek now here as we sit on Thursday morning. Rod Beard tweeted on Wednesday morning, Rod Beard of the Detroit News, reading the tea leaves, it seems that if the Pistons, Stan Van Gundy, were going to be fired, it would have been done by now. The two options seem to be extension, in parentheses, more likely, or mutual parting ways. I kind of agree. Maybe there will be some sort of official change in the structure of the front office, or maybe some talks of some new blood to come in, whether in the Chauncey Billups rumor was still out there. For whatever that's worth, Mark Stein reported that, I believe in January, that a new-look front office with Chauncey Billups and Arne Tellem kind of leading the way, with Van Gundy maybe offered the job as coach to stay on, or maybe them bringing in someone else, could be the future for the Pistons. Now, James and Vince and Rod have pretty much dismiss that as something that's not going to happen. But, you know, as we know from following the NBA, guys like Adrian Wojnarowski and Mark Stein, to a lesser extent, Mark now with the New York Times, have kind of the information. I mean, the local beat guys do a good job, and we're lucky to have them. But the same is true in the NFL and really with professional sports. Just how big ESPN has gotten, and the relationship between the leagues and ESPN, and the celebrity status of some of those newsbreakers has led the way for those guys to be breaking all the significant stories these days. Not all of them, but pretty much all of them. It's interesting because Adrian Wojnarowski, I've read some profiles on him, and the reason that he gets a lot of these scoops is because of the relationships he has, obviously, but when he gets information, he's also able to give information. He's a conduit both ways. So it's just kind of an inside baseball journalism thing, but that's kind of one of the main reasons why. There were some profiles a ways back that I'll tweet out about him that were very interesting, especially when we think about the drafts and how those guys are always breaking the picks before that happen. And we'll see if that happens again with the NFL draft tonight. And speaking of the draft, the Lions pick at number 20. Saw Chris Burke of The Athletic go with the Alabama linebacker in his latest mock draft. Harold Landry, not going to be available, is kind of the latest. Vita Vea gone in the mid-teens as well. So we will see if Marcus Davenport's going to be even available, or if the Lions want to get Tavon Bryan from Florida. I'm interested to see what happens tonight, obviously. But if you are too, you should be listening to Locked On Lions with Matt Derry, formerly of Detroit Radio. You should be checking that out every day. And also, all the other NBA podcasts, one for every NFL team and NBA team out there. And also check out our landing page at lockedonsports.com too. The Locked On Network, your team every day. A big one today in Pistons playoff playback, April 27th, 1984. Isaiah versus Bernard King. 34 years ago on Friday, this was game five of the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Pistons had home court in their first appearance in the NBA playoffs in many years, and they were the four seed in this first round matchup against the New York Knicks. That was a five-game series back then. Pistons ended up losing this game and the series 127 to 123. The Knicks took game one of the series at the Silverdome. That's right. The Silverdome hosted the first couple of games in this series and then went back to Madison Square Garden for three or four. But for game five, it came back down to downtown Detroit at Joe Louis Arena. That's right. The Joe hosted one of the biggest games in Isaiah Thomas's career. The Silverdome was filled with dirt for a pre-scheduled motocross. Chuck Daly, the famed Pistons coach and late great Daddy Rich, joked that folks might have thought that they weren't going to make the playoffs, and after about a decade of futility, they had good reason to believe that, although Isaiah Thomas was ushering in a new era of Detroit Pistons basketball that would set the stage for many great, exciting times for us Detroit sports fans. The first two games at the Silverdome got barely just over 10,000 fans for each of them. You can imagine that place that could seat 80 so for football games getting about 10,000 fans in there. I can't imagine a place like that being so empty. I'd been to the Silverdome for basketball games before, but again, this was a little bit before my time. I barely have recollections of going. My dad took me and my two older brothers and also our older cousin to watch Julius Erving's last game as a member of the 76ers against the Pistons. He kind of went on one of those farewell tours, and I think my dad got free tickets at Big Boy. You know how they used to buy up all those tickets and have giveaways at Big Boy in the Detroit area. Well, he ended up getting a bunch of those and said, oh, I'll take all the boys to the game. And he describes it to this day as kind of a miserable experience because he's got the three young kids, well, four young kids, actually. And every time it was back then where you had general admission seating up in the top deck there. So, every time you left to go to the bathroom, someone would take your seat, and it wasn't like you had a number that mattered on your ticket. So every time he'd corral us up and go sit down, then someone had to go to the bathroom again and blah, blah, blah. And I can imagine that Dr. J was pretty low down on the court, and you probably couldn't see that much. So I don't think that was one of my dad's favorite nights as a Detroit sports fan. But back at the Joe for April 27th, 1984, the teams alternated wins throughout the series, and that would continue through that last game that the Knicks did win and move on to the second round. Bernard King had 40 points already, and the Knicks led by double digits with under 2 minutes to go, and that's when Isaiah would go nuts. He would score 16 points in the final 94 seconds of regulation. Think about that, 16 in 94 seconds, so a minute and a half of play, he got 16 points. And that was while he was stripped on a drive in the final play of regulation with a chance to win it by Darrell Walker there. So the future Piston would get the best of his future teammate. Isaiah would go on to score five more points in overtime, but the Knicks were too strong, went on a long run to take the lead there. Isaiah Thomas would foul out in the game, kind of sealing the fate for the Pistons on that season in the 83-84 year. So the Knicks would win, and Bernard King finished with 44 points. Incredibly, his fourth straight 40-point effort in the series. Zeke had 35 in one of the most remarkable one-on-one showdowns in NBA history. And while Bernard King had all sorts of knee problems, and his career would be cut short by those injuries, and he would never really fulfill that promise that he had as a young player against Isaiah Thomas that night in a steamy Joe Louis Arena, according to Chuck Daly in the articles afterwards. But Isaiah Thomas, of course, would go on to be the Hall of Fame icon that he is for the Detroit Pistons. And this was the night that kind of springboarded him into that national conversation and put him in the echelon of players up where, Magic and Bird and those guys and Kareem at that time were kind of still on another level, of course, as they were starting to win championships and starting to become the faces of the NBA, but Isaiah Thomas would carve out his own niche in the NBA hierarchy at that time as well. Chuck Daly, after the game, said, "Sometimes Zeke is magical. Only he can play like that." And as Pistons fans, we can vouch for that as well. But give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, and another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. I hope you're enjoying these Pistons playoff playbacks. I've been watching a lot of the YouTube clips, and hopefully you guys can jump on this weekend and watch some of those clips as well. Let me know what you think, and if you have some specific memories of some of these games or some other ones that you'd like me to talk about here on the podcast as well, that would be good to know. So check out the Facebook page as well, Locked On Pistons - Matt Schoch, and give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. So we'll be waiting for Stan Van Gundy news this weekend, and if there's something big, well before Monday's scheduled podcast, maybe we'll jump on and give another one. But if that's not the case, then we'll talk to you on Monday. So you guys enjoy the weekend and enjoy some more NBA playoff basketball.